Hi, and welcome to Lakeshore Updates. I'm Dee Dotson. On this edition of the podcast, you'll hear the latest on recommendations for flu vaccines. Brandon Smith has a conversation with each of the candidates in the U.S. Senate race, as well as the Indiana Secretary of State race. And Chris Nolte has a conversation with Julia Vaughn of Common Cause Indiana. All of that and more on this edition of Lakeshore Updates. The State Budget Committee has signed off on a list of school financial risk indicators. Indiana Public Broadcasting's Jenny Lindsay reports schools now know which factors the state plans to monitor in order to track each corporation's fiscal health.
The state's Distressed Unit Appeal Board, or DUAB, oversees schools in financial trouble. This year, a committee has worked to create a list of financial status indicators. That way, the board can see which schools might be at risk for major money issues, then step in before it's too late. The final list includes 8 factors total. DUAB Executive Director Courtney Skofsma says one factor focuses on how much referendum money, decided by voters, makes up a district's budget.
That was important to see how heavily a school corporation is relying upon the referendum revenue for everyday operating expenses.
The committee will meet once more to finalize the list and begin using the indicators next year. For Indiana Public Broadcasting, I'm Jeannie Lindsay.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson. The city of Gary is getting a $46,000 federal loan to move along its plans to turn a ruined church into a tourist attraction. The loan, through the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency, will be used for asbestos abatement on the dilapidated City Methodist Church. The Times reports the Gothic-style church dating to the 1920s closed in 1975 after years of declining membership. Most of its roof has collapsed, but Gary officials are working to create a park-like ruins garden incorporating parts of the church as a dramatic backdrop. The Northwest Indiana Regional Development Authority approved the asbestos abatement loan. The authority's CEO, Sherry Miller, says the loan will be used as leverage for more funding from Indiana's Office of Community and Rural Affairs. You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson. Tennessee regulators rejected a plan to move Valparaiso University's struggling law school to Middle Tennessee State University, casting uncertainty on the future of the Northwest Indiana Law School. The Tennessee Higher Education Commission voted 8-5 Monday to deny the school's transfer. The two schools' governing boards had endorsed the transfer agreement earlier this month, nearly a year after Valparaiso announced that the private college's law school was facing severe financial challenges. Valparaiso officials said in a statement that they were disappointed by the commission's vote and would continue providing the opportunity for students currently enrolled in its law program to complete their legal education through Valparaiso University Law School in a timely manner. The statement did not address what future options remain for the law school. School spokeswoman Nicole Niemi said Tuesday that the university had no additional comment. You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson. Purdue University has dropped a proposal to add Northwest to the top of diplomas granted at satellite campuses. The Post-Tribune reports the decision followed some protest and other criticism at campuses in Hammond and Westville. Students said they were told they could get a Purdue degree at a lower cost by living at home and commuting. Student Government Association Vice President Dustin Thibodeau says it shows that officials, quote, took the students' concerns seriously. There will be some small changes. Chancellor Thomas Keon says the campus location at the bottom of diplomas will be shortened to, quote, Purdue Northwest from Purdue University Northwest. You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson. U.S. Surgeon General and former Indiana State Health Commissioner Jerome Adams recently recommended people get flu vaccines this month. Indiana Public Broadcasting's Jill Sheridan reports this year's vaccine is changed to make it more effective and accessible.
Last year's flu vaccination was about 40% effective. Over the past few years, another option, the flu mist, was also unavailable. Indiana University Health Dr. Cole Beeler says this is because one of the predominant viruses included in the mist vaccine wasn't a good match.
This has been swapped out with a new H1N1 virus, and the CDC now recommends that it should be okay for this vaccine to be used. So it is an option again this year for patients.
A combination of 3 to 4 viruses are put into the influenza vaccine based on a CDC forecast. More than 300 people in Indiana died from flu complications last season. For Indiana Public Broadcasting, I'm Jill Sheridan.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson.
Indiana is asking the U.S. Supreme Court to hear arguments over a law that bars women from having an abortion based on gender, race, or disability. The law was signed in 2016 when Vice President Mike Pence was Indiana governor, but federal courts have blocked it, saying it violates a woman's rights to end her pregnancy. Attorney General Curtis Hill on Friday asked the Supreme Court to take the case. He acknowledged a right to abortion, but says it's, quote, not a right to decide which child to bear. Ken Falk of the American Civil Liberties Union of Indiana says Indiana's petition is an attempt to infringe on the right to abortion. The law also requires abortion providers to dispose of aborted fetuses in the same way as human remains. That section also was blocked.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson.
A new report finds the state of Indiana is losing more than $1 billion in economic activity per year due to inadequate access to child care in the state. As Indiana Public Broadcasting's Samantha Horton reports, the study analyzes the impact of Hoosier parents in the workforce and offers solutions to recoup lost tax revenue.
The impact of inadequate child care on Indiana's workforce and economy report estimates about 11,000 Hoosiers leave their jobs each year due to child care issues. Maureen Weber is the president of the group Early Learning Indiana.
The other thing anecdotally that we hear is from workers who are turning down training opportunities or turning down promotions even because it might mean a change in their work hours, which might result in a child care situation for them.
The report recommends giving tax credits to companies that donate to child care providers or scholarships, similar to what is already done with scholarships for K-12 education, and creating additional learning providers. For Indiana Public Broadcasting, I'm Samantha Horton.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson.
Electric scooters are taking over Indiana cities. They are often billed as an environmentally friendly transportation alternative. But as Indiana Public Broadcasting's Rebecca Thiel reports, that depends on how you use them.
The companies Bird and Lime have dropped scooters in 5 Indiana cities: Indianapolis, Bloomington, Elkhart, West Lafayette, and South Bend. Most of the people who use them in Bloomington are Indiana University students in a hurry, like Nick Martin, a senior studying marketing and professional sales.
Honestly, it's because I've got a test to study for, so I kind of need to get here quickly. And it's kind of cold, so I just didn't want to walk.
Lime scooters, in particular, are advertised as an environmentally friendly alternative to cars. But when used as a substitute for walking or biking, they actually increase your carbon footprint. What's more, Nikos Zirogiannis, a research scientist at the IU School of Public and Environmental Affairs, says in Indiana, most of the electricity used to charge the scooters comes from coal.
And I would say that the impact here in Indiana would be worse than the impact that those scooters would have in other states around the country.
Martin says, knowing that, he feels a little lazy using the scooters.
Yeah, I mean, I'm still going to use them.
Those who charge electric scooters might also have to use gas to come pick them up. For Indiana Public Broadcasting, I'm Rebecca Thiel.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson.
Indiana's U.S. Senate race is one of the most critical in the country this year as Republicans and Democrats battle for control of Congress. Hoosier Democrat Joe Donnelly hopes to fend off challenges from Republican Mike Braun and Libertarian Lucy Brenton. Indiana Public Broadcasting's Brandon Smith talks with Donnelly about the race's most debated issues.
You've talked both in your ads and in person at the debates a lot about how your willingness to support President Trump. How much do you worry, though, that that kind of message turns off the Democratic base?
Well, my base is the people of Indiana. I don't go to Washington as a Democrat or as a Republican. I go as our senator to do what's right for our state. And so when the president is right, I'm with him, like I have been 62% of the time on legislation, 77% of the time on judges. And so, for instance, on right to try legislation, I was with the president. On opioids legislation. We actually have a piece of legislation on his desk right now, and so we work together on that as well.
Notably, however, one of the votes you did not side with President Trump on was a very recent one that's generated a bit of attention, which is obviously Judge Kavanaugh. Talk to me about that decision-making process.
Sure.
In the context of you were running for re-election, we're a month away as
right.
the vote was being taken
but
place.
But even while I'm running for re-election, my first job is to do what's right for the people of Indiana and to do what's right for our country. With Judge Kavanaugh, I used the same process that I've used, the same process I used when I voted for Justice Neil Gorsuch, President Trump's first pick. And Judge Kavanaugh, when you saw his testimony before the committee, I had very grave concerns about his impartiality and about his judicial temperament.
When you talk about working for Hoosiers, though, do you think a majority of people in Indiana wanted Brett Kavanaugh on the court?
The exact number, I don't know one way or the other. Perhaps it leaned that way. But my job isn't just to be a fax machine. My job is to do what's right for our country while taking all of the information from our state as well.
I can't think of too many Republicans in Indiana who've lost by railing against Obamacare. Are you concerned that Obamacare, even now, is still unpopular with Hoosiers and therefore your position on it will be unpopular with Hoosiers?
Well, I think what you need to do is ask any family in our state who has someone with a pre-existing condition. But here's the interesting thing about this, is Mike Braun has said he's for pre-existing conditions, but he supports a lawsuit that would take it away if the lawsuit is successful. He supported a Senate bill that would have taken away coverage for pre-existing conditions. And so he says one thing, but his actions show something completely different.
I want to talk a little bit about tariffs. There are Hoosiers who really like this idea of tariffs.
Right.
I think, of course, about the steelworkers and others, particularly farmers, who really don't like how this is played out. How do you, as a policymaker, balance those two competing interests?
Because I don't believe they're intertwined. We can do two things at the same time. This situation with the steelworkers is not new. I've testified before the International Trade Court on a number of occasions on behalf of our steelworkers in Northwest Indiana. I'll have their back every time. But fixing that should not result in the next step being $200 billion of tariffs on our farmers. And I met with the president personally and said, Mr. President, look, these tariffs are a dagger aimed at the heart of our farmers. And I urged him to find an off-ramp.
I can't imagine it's a super popular position to vote against tax cuts for Hoosiers, but that's what you did in voting against the tax reform package. So how do you justify that vote to the average voter?
How do I justify it? So it would be like the parents going out on a shopping spree and giving the kids in the house the bill. No parent would ever do that. That's what this tax bill was. I'm not in the business of piling up huge debt for our kids in order to give huge tax breaks to the very, very richest people in our country.
Thank you so much for sitting down with me.
Thank you very much.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson.
Many expect Indiana's U.S. Senate campaign to go down to the wire this November between Democratic incumbent Joe Donnelly and Republican challenger Mike Braun. Libertarian Lucy Brenton could have an impact on such a tight race. Indiana Public Broadcasting's Brandon Smith talks with Brenton about her goals and reasons for running.
How would you view being a U.S. senator as a libertarian?
As a libertarian, my job in the U.S. Senate would really to be to return us to constitutional values. The very first thing that I would do is look at what laws have been passed that are unconstitutional and work towards repealing those. We must go back to the master contract that governs this country, and that's the Constitution.
How do you envision doing that as presumably one libertarian among 99 other Republicans and Democrats for the most part?
It's funny because I also see my role there as a referee, to be somebody that can cross the line and say, let's work together. Because when the Republicans work with the Democrats, it's usually for something that's going to collude against the American public, increase taxes, you know, get those Christmas tree bills that are so famous passed. But my job as a libertarian would bring people to the point of consensus on freedom.
There's been a lot of discussion in this campaign about sort of how you represent Hoosiers when it comes to working with President Trump. How would you view your role as it comes to working with President Trump in D.C.?
My role would then be to hold him back from doing the things that are unconstitutional. My role is to hold people to the Constitution. That's the master contract. I think what we saw in the debate on October 8th was Senator Donnelly trying to prove how Republican he is, and of course Senator Braun with the ACA trying to prove how Democrat he is. What they're proving is that they are more of the same.
How do you define success when it comes to this sort of the tariffs that have been in play over the last year and a half?
How are these subsidies that are given to replace the money lost by tariffs affecting the average individual? The average Hoosier is paying multiple times for that tariff, first in the price of corn, then in the price of the subsidies to the farmers. So it's absolutely unacceptable that we're being stolen from at every level. I believe in zero corporate income taxes. The reason our jobs are being outsourced is so that we can keep prices low by not having as many corporate taxes included in the price. Having corporate taxes of zero would allow our corporations to stay in this country, keep prices low.
How do you replace the money that would be lost by zeroing out those taxes?
The money isn't lost anywhere. The money is simply in the consumer's hands instead of the government's. So if I pay $10 for a product instead of $15 because of the taxes, now the consumer pays $10 and the other $5 stays in the consumer's pocket where it belongs.
There's also the issue of health care. Is there any role for government in health care in your mind?
There is no role in government for health care in my mind. When government enters a market, it disrupts it. It's an unseen hand that moves prices up. When you take people out of the position of actually paying for their own health care, they don't know how much it costs. I'll use myself as an example. When I worked for the phone company, I had amazing insurance. I had a birth baby number 7 that was over $15,000. And I literally did not have even an aspirin. There was no OBGYN there. It was a midwife assisted birth. But yet with my baby number 9, born at home, that baby was $4,000. That's it. It's an $11,000 cost differential because there's no competition and you are insulated from the cost by the insurance companies. Do you want to know why your premiums are so high? That's it. It's that $1,000 aspirin.
If you remove government entirely from healthcare, though, doesn't that put everything in the hands of the insurance companies? And is that what people want?
No, it puts it back in the hands of the consumer and the provider where it should be.
The tax reform bill. Something that Mike Braun obviously supports, something that Joe Donnelly says was bad for this country in the long term. If you had been in the U.S. Senate when the tax reform bill came up, how would you have voted?
I will vote for anything that increases freedom and reduces costs, so I would have voted for it, but I don't think it went far enough. When I reviewed it, it looked like Trump took 35% to 21%, from 35% to 21% on the corporate income tax. That's great. That means that consumers are going to pay less, but it's not nearly good enough.
Well, thank you so much for sitting down with me.
Thank you.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson.
The eyes of many across the country will be on Indiana on election night as the Senate race between Democratic incumbent Joe Donnelly, Republican Mike Braun, and Libertarian Lucy Brenton could determine control of Congress. Indiana Public Broadcasting's Brandon Smith talks with Braun about the issues that have defined this year's race.
I want to talk first about a charge you've leveled at Joe Donnelly a lot in this campaign, which is the idea that he says one thing here in Indiana and then does something different in D.C. But his voting record is 62% of the time with President Trump. Isn't that the sort of independence that Hoosiers have come to expect from their senators?
On all of the important legislation, and that would be Obamacare originally voting for it, and then he voted against its repeal, voted against tax reform. And I think that was the big gamble because it's now, I think, starting to take hold. Voted for the Iran deal. That's what you're judged on. And I'm going there because I've not been happy with really either side. I've not been enamored with what conservatives have done. I think we haven't produced.
You did touch on some of the things I wanted to talk about, but I actually want to start with something, the idea of tariffs. On the one hand, steelworkers have been very happy about what the president has done. On the other hand, farmers have not. So how do you balance those seemingly competing interests when it comes to tariffs?
I'm not interested in tariffs at all as a long-term thing. They ought to all be gone, like most of us compete here in the U.S. I think President Trump, though, actually recognized that it's time to rectify these things, and I knew he was going to use it as a stick for a short term, and I was surprised that it's now been resolved in the three most important places, the EU, Mexico and Canada. The Chinese are different. And I never did think tariffs was going to be an effective tool with them, and that's proven to be the case. Once I'm elected our next senator, when I can bend the president's ear, if that hasn't been resolved, that needs to quickly change.
But at the same time then, all those Hoosier farmers out here hear you say, vote for me if you want to support President Trump's agenda. Well, they're looking at, for them, one of the biggest things of President Trump's agenda that's hurting them is tariffs.
And I agree. And most farmers I talk to, in this case, all of them were still willing to give it a little time.
Republicans have been railing against Obamacare for a long time now, pretty much since it was passed. And at least in Indiana, that's generally been a successful strategy. But over the last couple of years, with Republicans in control completely in Washington, D.C., they haven't been able to come up with that repeal and replace.
And I agree 100%. 10 years ago, when I had a raucous meeting with my current insurance providers, I said, I'm fed up with you telling me I'm lucky it's only going up 5 to 10%. When I took them on, I said, I wanted to make sure you cover pre-existing conditions and no cap on coverage. And that's the difference between somebody like me that's trying to actually lower costs and provide good coverage. Somebody like the senator signed on to Obamacare without having the foresight that it was doomed to fail.
I want to ask about the issue of tax reform. How can you say on the one hand, I'm really concerned about the deficit, and on the other hand say you would have supported a bill that adds billions to the deficit?
When you cut taxes, you're going to generate more economic activity. It gave businesses, and especially small ones, the job creators, it gave us, if you were successful in paying taxes, more Django in your pocket. We need to share it with our employees. You don't hear many conservatives saying it.
The realities of that bill, though, are that the biggest and most sustained benefits go to those who are in the much higher income brackets. So do you think that the average Hoosier is feeling like they got a good enough deal out of that?
Nancy Pelosi referred to it as crumbs, and now incrementally, just through lower withholding, that's approaching the $1,200 to $1,500 for the average middle-income taxpayer. They are now saying, yes, I can feel it. It's been there. It's real.
Thank you so much for sitting down with me.
You bet.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson.
Hoosiers will choose their next Secretary of State at the polls this year. It's a race between incumbent Republican Connie Lawson, Democrat Jim Harper, and Libertarian Mark Rutherford. Indiana Public Broadcasting's Brandon Smith talks with Lawson about the key issues in the race.
There's been a lot of talk this particular cycle, going back to 2016 really, about election security and what that means for the country and the state. So talk a little bit about what you've done so far to try to secure Indiana's elections.
You know, we know that the state is most vulnerable because of human error. And so the FBI told us there's two very important things you can do to protect your system. Strengthen your passwords, which we have done. Anyone who has access to a statewide voter registration system has a longer password with numbers and symbols, and so we've strengthened those passwords. But we also are using two-factor authentication. Every county in the state of Indiana is now using two-factor to access statewide voter registration system. Most counties, are also using the token. And so they have a USB token that they insert into their personal computer. In addition to using their username and password, that token says, yes, I'm physically present. I should be able to get into statewide voter registration system. And we took it a step further. That token even is time sensitive. So if I'm a part-time employee and I'm only supposed to have access to the system from 8 till noon, that's the time period that the token allows me to have that access.
One thing that, mm-hmm. that national experts say, paper ballots as a backup at the very minimum are really key. Mm-hmm. A lot of Indiana counties don't have them. We don't have the money at this point to transfer over, mm-hmm. at least that's what you've said. Shouldn't we ensure that paper ballots are being used in every county?
Voters need to understand no voting machine used in Indiana is connected to the internet. Our tabulation machines are not connected to the internet. And every machine that is used does have a paper trail. They may not have the new recommendation, the new voter verifiable paper trail, but we're moving in that direction. And I think it's important also to remember that, you know, all of these recommendations came about later this, you know, our General Assembly left in March, session was finished. So the recommendations came about in summer, you know, early fall. And so we're moving, obviously we're moving that direction. I've met with most of our vendors. We're talking about how we can get to that voter verifiable paper trail, but I assure you that every machine has a paper trail.
There's been a lot of talk in the last few years here in Indiana about election reform in terms of how we draw our districts, redistricting mm-hmm. reform, and that's been a bipartisan effort. Should the Secretary of State have a role in calling for reforms like that?
Yeah. Well, it's the constitutional duty of the General Assembly currently to draw the maps, to redistrict. And so if they put a question on the ballot and voters say, yes, we think it should be changed, I'm absolutely happy to support that.
In terms of things like expanded vote by mail, which some clerks have told me that they're really interested in, and the idea of same-day voter registration on Election Day, you can go and, mm-hmm. and do that. Are you supportive of those sorts of things?
Well, I think the devil's in the details on those things, so I haven't seen them. I know those ideas did not get out of the Senate committee this past session, and so if I'm happy to discuss those with them, and I talked with Senator Walker during that time and shared with him some of my concerns, but I know that they'll be working on those issues in the future.
There hasn't been a Democrat in the Secretary of State's office in a couple of decades now. Should there be more balance in the leadership of Indiana?
You know, the Democrat State Party made a blunder, and they sent out hundreds of thousands of absentee ballot applications to their voters. And when I learned the scope of the issue, I stepped up on behalf of Democrats, and I said, these forms should be accepted. And so I can't think of anything that gives any more balance than that. I protect all voters, and our office works on a bipartisan basis.
That's it. Thanks so much for sitting down with me.
Okay.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson.
Libertarian Secretary of State candidate Mark Rutherford says he wants to dramatically improve on the 3.5% of the vote his party got in the race 4 years ago. He faces incumbent Republican Connie Lawson and Democrat Jim Harper. Indiana Public Broadcasting's Brandon Smith talks with Rutherford about his views on the issues in this year's race.
I want to talk about, as a chief election officer, what do you feel that Indiana isn't doing that you would do differently?
Well, the voting security is a horrible thing. We're not even close to what banks do, what big companies do, small companies do, and security. Small companies have better security than the voting systems in Indiana. It's not getting the attention it needs. And that's awful, because the first thing that a government does to be respected is have voting systems that people trust. We have no backup system paper right now. Why do you have a paper backup system now? Because the electronic system is not secure enough. We had allegations of a couple years ago that the Russians were just kind of meddling around, or somebody with Russian ties were. And that tells me that we're nowhere near where we need to be. It's doing what government does so often. It's putting its money elsewhere, and it's not doing it for priority number one, which is that the succession of elected officials and the selection of elected officials is the very first thing it must do, and it must do well. Just throwing money at it doesn't let alone do it. It's got to be wise and with thought and with the very best to do that. And that's not happening right now.
Besides that, what else would you do to help guarantee election security in Indiana?
Well, one thing is getting better electronic systems. The systems are not up to par. I don't see the type of companies that need to be doing that, not knocking the companies now, because they're doing it from a fair market position, which is, this is what they want, this is what we can afford to do to give them what they want and make it a decent living off of it. You've got to put a lot more effort into it, and you've got to go out and find the very best, not do what we normally do in state government, which is try to get cheap.
Given the criticisms you and others, including Mr. Harper, the Democratic candidate, have sort of lobbed at what Secretary Lawson has done or hasn't done on election security, along with the General Assembly, should Hoosiers be worried about their votes and whether or not they're secure when they cast their ballots?
They should be worried about their votes and casting their ballots. You never know when what I would use the term meltdown happens. You don't know who's doing what. We know that there are people who have always done this. If you study history, historians know this. Countries have been delving into other countries' businesses for hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of years. So you need to be ahead of it and have the systems to counter that. And it's just not happening right now.
The Secretary of State oversees elections.
Yes.
Should the Secretary of State also be playing a role in advocating for election reforms like independent redistricting?
Yes. As Secretary of State, if you're paying attention, you should be telling the General Assembly what's working and what's not working. It should be the number one advocate for election reform. And we do need election reform. We need it on gerrymandering and redistricting, where it's not politicians picking the voters, it's voters picking the politicians. Gerrymandering prevents that. We need to have somebody there going, this needs to change.
What other election reforms would you like to see Indiana take part in?
Well, one of them is that I like to joke, but it's really not a joke, that we have a great election code for 1870. We no longer do a horse and buggy or a horse to the courthouse. There's no need to make sure everybody's together on the same day to make sure that we have only the people who should be voting voting. You can have voting in other ways that other states are experimenting with. Early voting should be more convenient. Why should we just have one day? Why should it be just 6 o'clock to 6 o'clock? When that's not the way this world works anymore, especially here in Indiana. Those hours keep people from voting. It's easier to absentee vote than it used to be, but still, that's a hassle. Why can't there be more time, more early voting centers? Those are reforms that are desperately needed.
Well, thank you so much for sitting down with me.
All right, well, thank you.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson.
Democrats haven't won the race for Secretary of State since 1990. Jim Harper hopes to change that this year as he faces incumbent Republican Connie Lawson and Libertarian Mark Rutherford. Indiana Public Broadcasting's Brandon Smith talks with Harper about the race's key issues.
So I think a topic when it comes to the Secretary of State's race that's on a lot of people's minds is the issue of election security. Should Hoosiers feel like Indiana's elections are secure?
What we do know is that our state leadership is not doing enough to ensure that our voting machines are secure in the state of Indiana. We know that our voting machines are vulnerable in this state, and we know that Indiana and the entire country is a target. What I'm concerned about is that we haven't taken enough steps to make sure that we're securing our voting machines this year.
So what steps would you take?
I'm a strong supporter of making sure that there's a voter-verified paper trail, paper ballots essentially, in every county. Indiana is one of only 13 states that does not require a voter-verified paper trail. Most counties do not have them. I think that we need to enact them. I wish we had done it this year for the 2018 elections, but absolutely we need to do it for 2020.
And now that's something that Connie Lawson has talked about, which is the idea of she does want to move towards that. These recommendations came out from the national level about all these things that states should be doing, some of which Indiana has been doing, some of which, notably the paper ballots, it is not. But that also requires money. So is Connie Lawson just in a bind for this particular cycle?
We could have had paper ballots this year. The reason that we do not is because Secretary Lawson did not show leadership on the issue. There are federal funds available that will help us, that could have helped us this year change to paper machines in every county. Secretary Lawson decided not to use it for that purpose. And moreover, she also decided not to go to the legislature at any point in the last 2 years to request funding to make sure that we upgrade our machines.
Beyond election security, there's the issue of election reforms. I'll start with this, which is, is the Secretary of the State the person who should be advocating for reforms like independent redistricting?
Yes, the Secretary of State is the Chief Elections Officer. So I think it's critical that the person in that office show leadership on making sure that our election system is more fair and more robust. You mentioned nonpartisan redistricting. I think that there is no bigger threat to our democracy than extreme partisan gerrymandering. You cannot run fair elections with unfair districts, and so it's incumbent upon the Secretary of State to take leadership on that issue.
Beyond redistricting, which seems like the headline grabber when we talk about election reform, are there other reforms that you think Indiana needs?
Absolutely. We need to work to improve Indiana's voter turnout. Voter turnout has been historically very low in the state over the last several cycles. In 2014, we had the lowest voter turnout in the country. We were 51 out of 51. I'm a strong supporter of longer voting hours. Indiana has some of the shortest voting hours in the country. I also think that we need to expand voting by mail. Voting by mail is secure. It's also something that we know improves turnout.
On the issue of balance, Connie Lawson, when I posed that question, talked about a very recent example of this Democratic Party accidentally sent out faulty absentee ballot applications to a lot of voters. And Connie Lawson was alerted to the problem, stepped up and said, I want clerks to accept these. Isn't that a good case for the balance is already there because she's acting in a nonpartisan way?
So I think it's pretty clear that Secretary Lawson has done a lot of things that have made it harder for people to vote in this state and that have reduced our voter turnout. And initially, Secretary Lawson was not saying that those forms should be accepted. It's pretty clear that the absentee ballot forms complied with the spirit of state law. Obviously there were some issues with them, and I'm glad that everything got resolved. But initially, Secretary Lawson wasn't pushing for those to be accepted. And there are other examples, like the voter purge last year. Secretary Lawson eliminated about 500,000 Hoosier voters from the voter rolls. A federal judge later came in and said that that was illegal, that that violated federal law. I don't think that that was an area of bipartisan compromise or consensus.
Thanks so much for sitting down with me.
Thanks for having me, Brandon.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson.
Here's regionally speaking host Chris Nolte with a conversation with Common Cause Indiana's Julia Vaughn.
Gerrymandering is when politicians use the redistricting process, the process that we go through every 10 years after the census to redraw our legislative districts for both the Congress and state legislature. It's when they use that process to gain partisan political advantage. I think it's limiting the choices that Indiana voters have, and it's making many voters feel like they just don't have a voice. If you go to the polls religiously, election day after election day, and you're consistently choosing the losing candidate, then many people feel like they don't have a voice in the process. So I think it's just really having a significant impact on civic engagement here in Indiana. And the good news is there is a growing number of people both inside and outside of the State House who want to change it. So that's what we'll be talking about on Saturday at the Purdue Northwest campus in Westville.
Now, it's coming up on October 20th there at the Dworkin Center in the Westville campus. What extremes can you think of that gerrymandering has gone to in many cases?
It's impacting various communities. For example, the Hobart City Council earlier this year passed a resolution that our coalition, the Indiana Coalition for Independent Redistricting, is urging local governments around the state to pass. And so far, 25 have done that, with Hobart being one of the most recent ones. And one of the city councilors, when they were discussing this resolution, he said, well, it's obvious that gerrymandering is practiced up here in Lake County. Look at Hobart. We're a small town that is divided into two legislative districts. I believe there are, what, maybe 10, 12,000 people in Hobart. Mm-hmm. A legislative state house district has 66,000 people. So it could easily fit inside one district. And so many people believe that it's probably politics that caused the lines to fall where they did. And there are just numerous examples of that across the state, both at the state Senate, state House, and congressional level. Greencastle, Indiana is split right down Main Street between two House districts. And again, Greencastle is a town of about 10,000 people. So all sorts of those odd stories. You know, there's a House district down in South Central Indiana that combines parts of Bloomington with parts of Martinsville. And if you know anything about Southern Indiana, you know that those are two towns that are really, really different, just have different politics, different kinds of people, and it's just kind of a jarring combination. There's a state Senate district here that includes small town Greenfield with the very urban, near east side of Indianapolis. And the state senator is from the small town of Greenfield. And, you know, he admits that it is very, very difficult for him to represent his district wholly because, you know, the needs of the people in the small town of Greenfield are sometimes radically different from the needs of the people in urban Indianapolis. So I think it creates problems for legislators as well in terms of fully representing all of their constituents. You know, this is an issue where there are just a variety of ways for people to get involved. That's one of the things that we'll be talking about on Saturday. This is something that everybody can contribute to, and we've got to. You know, our task here in Indiana is harder than reformers in some other states that have the opportunity to reform redistricting through the ballot initiative. You know, for example, our neighbors over in Ohio, last year, voters were able to go to the polls and vote directly on this. We don't use ballot initiatives in Indiana. So if we are going to reform redistricting, we have to get the people who benefit from gerrymandering to pass a law to change it. So the only way that is going to happen is if tens of thousands of Hoosiers stand up and demand that it happen. The other thing to remember is time's running out now. 2019 will really be not our last, but our best effort to get this done. New maps will be drawn in 2021. Whether we have a reform system or not, that's going to happen in 2021. So we need to really make significant changes this year in order to have them implemented in time for the new maps being drawn in 2021.
Now we have the event coming up on Saturday that's going to happen at the Purdue University Northwest campus in Westville at the Dworkin Center. It looks like from the time it starts, which is about 1:30 in the afternoon, it's going to be a very complete activist training workshop. What areas do you think that will probably be discussed first, just the overall dynamics of why it's important to do this redistricting reform?
This is a big issue, and so we will talk about why this needs to happen. What are some of the problems? What's the evidence that we have partisan gerrymandering here in Indiana? Then we'll talk about what does reform look like? What are those states that have reformed their systems, and how can we borrow some of their laws to implement a better way here in Indiana? And then we'll talk about what individuals can do, things like hosting house parties, the gathering signatures on the petitions, getting resolutions passed. I mentioned earlier that Hobart and several cities in Lake County, Michigan City, LaPorte have passed these resolutions, but there's plenty of other cities and towns that haven't. So that's a great way that individuals can go to their a city council person, you can go to your county commissioners and ask them to pass this resolution to show their support for making these changes.
Regionally Speaking with host Chris Nolte can be heard each Monday through Thursday at noon on Lakeshore Public Radio 89.1 FM and streaming online at lakeshorepublicradio.org, where you can also find podcasts of the show when you click on the program link. For the latest in local news and information, tune in Monday at 6 a.m. for Morning Edition with local host Chris Nolte. Lakeshore Update is supported by the listeners and members of Lakeshore Public Radio, 89.1 FM. Podcasts for Lakeshore Update are posted each Friday on our website, lakeshorepublicradio.org, as well as on NPR One. Make sure you search for WLPR and select us as your home station. Music for Lakeshore Update was written and produced by BenSound.com. For Lakeshore Update, I'm Dee Dotson.